Welcome to the Easy EdTech Podcast with your host, Dr. Monica Burns.
Hello there, and welcome to today's episode of the Easy EdTech Podcast. If we haven't met before, my name is Monica Burns. I'm a former New York City public school teacher, and I've been out of the classroom for a few years, leading professional development for teachers and writing about all things EdTech on my blog, classtechtips.com. You might be used to joining me on Tuesdays for new episodes of the podcast, and today is a special bonus episode in partnership with Sirtel. I'm excited to bring you another special bonus episode on a Sunday where I chat with Fred Franson, the co-founder of Sirtel. Before we jump into today's episode, a quick reminder. You can head to my website, classtechtips.com/podcast, for all of the show notes and resources from today's episode. And if you're listening into this episode on a podcast player like Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or Google Podcasts, someplace where there's a description with some info you can click on, you'll see some other links there too. And if you click on them, even as you're listening to this, it'll keep playing in the app for you, and you can check out some of the resources at the same time. This episode is sponsored by Sirtel and their Poptential family of products that offers free online classes in American and world history, economics, and personal finance. Sirtel provides a sensible and entertaining curriculum that animates the classroom and enables innovative teachers to engage with and motivate today's connected students. The title of today's episode is The Role of Pop Culture in Online Learning, and it is such a fun, informative conversation. As you'll hear in this episode, I chat with Fred Franson, the co-founder of Sirtel, and we talk about the process of finding pop culture-friendly tips to share with students and make plenty of references to older favorites, including a few Seinfeld episodes too. If you're curious about using pop culture in the classroom, if you want to make content relevant and authentic for students, then this episode is for you. Let's go ahead and dive into the conversation. Welcome to the podcast. So excited to chat today about this topic of pop culture and online learning. Before we jump in, I'm hoping, Fred, that you can introduce yourself, share a little bit about your role and your background in this space.
Sure. So my name is Fred Franson. I live in Indianapolis, Indiana. I got involved in K-12 curriculum in 2015 when I launched Sirtel. I had been working with some professors who had developed content specifically for teaching economics online or using digital tools. I really loved what they were doing. I thought they had a finger on how to do content right in the digital age, and launched Sirtel to help them and then also to build other content in the social studies area.
Wonderful. Well, you know, as we get ready to talk about online learning and this pop culture connection today, I think, you know, to just kind of start things off or set the stage for our conversation, you know, it's been such a challenging year and a half, right, in education. And even saying that in a sentence seems like an understatement for what, you know, the profession has felt. And, you know, how do you achieve quality education in an online learning space with teacher shortages and with remote learning transitions? I know there are still places that are supporting students virtually. So what does quality education look like today?
Well, what we try to do is to support the innovative teachers that are disrupting the classroom, particularly in social studies. Our content is all high school social studies. And we want to help them do that by providing them with media-rich content that can engage their digitally savvy students and motivate them to learn. I think the big challenge has been, how do you motivate students to learn? And we think in an online and a remote or a hybrid or intermittent learning environment, and we think that a really powerful tool for doing that is inserting pop culture into the curriculum and doing it in a smart way.
Yeah, I think that quality component is so crucial there too, right? Just doing it in a smart and thoughtful way. And, you know, one of the reasons I was so excited to chat with you today is because of that social studies connection. And we know that social studies isn't just one part of the day, right? We bring in current events into all the things that we do or we talk about with students. And I don't share about it a lot, but I'm sure listeners of the podcast probably heard me mention before, you know, I have an undergraduate degree in elementary education, a graduate or doctoral degree in educational leadership, but I have a master's degree in American history and did a lot of professional development, part of the Teaching American History grants here in New York City, where I was a public school teacher. So this idea of social studies content that is relevant and high quality is definitely one that is near and dear to my heart. So can you tell us a little bit about how do you use pop culture as a learning tool?
Sure. So Poptential is what we call our curriculum. And we have courses in economics and personal finance, course packages, I should say, in economics and personal finance, one semester that can be stretched to two, a full year of American history, a full year of world history, and a semester of American government. So all the core high school social studies subjects. The way that we have built our materials is by creating high quality textbooks using scholars in their fields to write it for the most part. And then we go out and we find young people who know about pop culture and we map the two. Nice. The first year we tried to do this, first summer we began enhancing our curriculum. We had two college student interns and four high school teachers. Interns. And at the end of this, and all of their job was to look at our materials, can identify the key concepts that were supposed to be learned by students, and then go out and find a pop culture video or a pop culture reference that is illustrative of that concept. The two college students outperformed the four high school teachers by a long margin. So what we've done now the last few years is we bring in about a dozen college students, sometimes high school students who have just graduated, and we, you know, immerse them in the curriculum, and then we ask them to go out and say, okay, here's something on, you know, the discontent of the American colonists. Go find something out of popular TV shows that you watch, and up comes, you know, It's Always Sunny in Philadelphia.
Right.
And then we edit it carefully, make sure that it's educationally relevant. It's not just for entertainment purpose. It's not for entertainment purposes at all. It's entertaining, hopefully, but it's not there for entertainment purposes. And then we interweave it into the textbook.
Nice. I mean, it's so interesting to hear about the partnership, right? What that looks like behind the scenes to make that happen. I like to think that I have not been in education long enough to have been using videotapes or VCR. But if I'm being honest, right, like I have definitely held my finger over the record button on a VCR trying to get right that just right clip on a videotape so that I could then right capture it that way. And that feels like ancient history, even though it wasn't, you know, that long ago, to try and grab some type of content that's relevant. And so just logistically, how does this work, right? If you take a fragment from a pop culture style, right? Fragment from a TV show or a film, what has to happen in terms of the originators of the content? Are they, you know, do they give a thumbs up for this? Do they complain about you grabbing a short chunk from Always Sunny in Philadelphia or another show? What does that look like logistically?
Yeah. So first of all, it's important to note that it's really important that the materials be used for educational purposes. Having said that, no, we have not had any complaints from any content creators, but we have so many different links to so many different things that there's no way we could go out through the copyright permissions process.
Okay.
And instead we rely upon educational fair use, which is a principle that's fairly well established for using video in the classroom. There are a number of components to it. One is the video needs to be, again, specifically for an educational purpose, not for entertaining purposes, no longer than it needs to be for that purpose. And so we always edit significantly any clips that we're using. And then it needs to be only used in an educational environment. So our materials can't be used outside of a classroom environment. And like I said, we believe that that's all well within educational fair use. And we believe that the content creator should be pleased that we're using their materials to teach. And a couple of other things. One is that we never charge for it. We neither charge for the video collection nor for any part of our curriculum. It's absolutely free to teachers. We believe they have enough struggles on their hands to not have to worry about finding them the funding to buy things.
Right. I guess that would remove some of the commercial use piece, right? Or that argument there, right? Mm-hmm. On that end. So yeah, I guess having those short clips, right? Being super focused with that curriculum connection, you know, when it comes to why we're watching this or when we're watching this, right? All of those layers there is really interesting to think about, especially because, you know, there might be moments where, you know, I know as a classroom teacher, I might make a more casual connection, right? When something came up, like, oh, this reminds me of, or y'all might have seen this last night on whatever, right? Like, so those are things that might have come up kind of organically in conversation, but I love that this is so strategic and thoughtful and connected to the curriculum. So, you know, you gave that example about the success rate, if you will, of getting different people that you work with to find some of that pop culture content, right? Like who is the right go-to person, right, behind mm-hmm. the scenes to pick it out. But how do you measure the success of pop culture in the classroom? What does that look like, or what types of factors are you taking into consideration there?
Mm-hmm. We did a study last spring with Project Tomorrow, and over 500 teachers responded to questions about their use of pop culture in the classroom and popular media in the classroom. And an overwhelming 96% of teachers said that using it helps students to learn. And well over half of those teachers said it was very valuable in the classroom. So teachers are on the lookout for pop culture, for good quality clips that are relevant that they can use in the classroom. And they overwhelmingly recognize the potential of it. What's the challenge that teachers face, and again, we want to support teachers in teaching social studies well. The challenge that they face is that students who are learning about things going on around them, they have a 24/7 high production value video available to them on their smartphones.
Yeah.
And as a consequence, if you are a teacher, you need to come up with some way of responding to the fact that you're not going to be able to create content that's anywhere close to the production value, the quality, the expense that is the alternative for students. You know, and so what we do is we go out and do that mapping for them. Teachers want to do this. They are doing it. But the problem they face is that it's an overwhelmingly difficult task to find all of the things that are going to be relevant, to know where they play, you know, where they fit in the curriculum, and to apply them properly. And so that's what we do on their behalf. And, you know, again, we bring in for our four subjects, we bring in three or four students per subject that are simply refreshing content each summer, because there's such an overwhelmingly large amount of material to look through. And then we can, you know, maybe identify 5 or 10 clips, and then our interns get together and they rate them and they compare them. And then, you know, we make judgments about what are the best ones, always trying to improve at the margin what we're doing. And by the way, we use paid interns. And we think it's really the value that these college students and high school students are adding to the world of American social studies is overwhelming. And we absolutely believe it's important that we compensate for them.
I'm glad you mentioned that too.
If I may one more comment about our interns, they're just fantastic. We recruit them from students that have, most of them have participated, or many of them have participated in the We the People program.
Okay, yeah.
Which is mm-hmm. a national competition in the social studies, particularly related to the Constitution. We find those students, the well-prepared students, are really great at the tasks that we put in front of them. And the other thing that we find is most of our interns have been now with us for a number of years. They keep coming back. Working for Sertel, building potential curriculum, if you're interested in these subjects and, you know, American society, has to be one of the best internships available in the country. Watch TV and get paid for it and change the country.
Gosh, I mean, Fred, my wheels are spinning here, because I can just imagine that once they do, say, like one summer with you all, that like anytime they see something, they're just like, oh, that would work with this, or oh, that would work with this, mm-hmm. right? Like just with that teacher hat on all the time of saying like, oh, this would be a perfect way to explain this thing. I feel like it would never escape you, like kind of leaving right the back mm-hmm. of your mind when you're watching, you know, the next new thing on Netflix or whatever it might be. So mm-hmm. that's so fun to hear about that behind the scenes process for those pieces.
Well, and another thing I think it's important to mention is that, you know, again, back to, we are about serious social studies.
Yeah.
You know, we're trying to, you know, we think there's a a real problem in this country of educating students to be self-governing, mm-hmm. to be making good decisions, to be making up their own mind about these questions that everybody on cable news is screaming at us about. Mm-hmm. And so it's really important today, we think, more than ever, to create a well-informed citizenry. And that is absolutely our mission. But the pop culture, what we think that does is build it into a bigger framework of teacher resources that allow for a shift in how teachers spend their time in the classroom. So we may talk a little bit about remote learning, but I think it's even more important to talk about how technology can allow teachers to change for the better how they spend their time. You know, in my mind, education is about transmitting four things: knowledge, skills, wisdom, and motivation from teacher to student. Now, motivation is kind of its own thing, and so let's leave that one off. But knowledge and skills, I think technology, I believe deeply, technology can do most of the heavy lifting for that. Mm-hmm. Some subjects that might actually even be better at it than people. But there's no substitute for a great teacher in the conveying of wisdom. And I'm using wisdom. I have a PhD in social thought, so I'm using that in a kind of hoity-toity way. Mm-hmm. It may be better, a better term would be critical thinking.
Right.
Mm-hmm. If you know, critical thinking doesn't happen from reading a book. It happens from engaging with other people, from engaging with teachers, from being involved in discussions, and so on. And so what we want to do is create curricular tools that allow teachers to spend more time interacting with students and less time lecturing. We also did some research in the spring about what effect COVID had on teaching with teachers that were using our materials. And what quite a number of the teachers that we talked to said, without being prompted, is that they learned that our materials kind of teach themselves. And so now that they're back in the classroom for the most part, they're allowed to shift away from lecturing and shift towards discussions, activities, mm-hmm. and things like that. And that was absolutely music to my ears. That's exactly what we want our curriculum to do, is free up teachers' time to do the more creative things that are going to engage students' minds and are going to get them thinking, as opposed to simply passing on facts by lecturing and writing on an overhead or something like that. And we were really, really pleased to hear firsthand from our teachers that they had recognized that as one of their lessons from COVID.
Yeah, I can imagine that kind of just, you know, the big lessons from remote learning or the big transfers or changes of things, right? That idea of giving kids access to those resources and then really facilitating the discussions when you have that synchronous or live time face-to-face together is definitely something that I've heard a lot too. And, you know, I've talked on the podcast a few different times. It's the first chapter of my new book, really talking about this idea of curation, right? And curating resources and the idea that you are taking that heavy lifting out, right? To say, we found the very best. We have a team that's vetting these resources, which is such a time-consuming process when you think of going out into YouTube and just like looking out at the world of mm-hmm. video clips. The fact that these are so thoughtfully chosen and purposefully connected to curriculum goals is just huge. And, you know, before we talk about what is next for Poptential, I'd love to hear a little bit, you know, maybe almost like an origin story, if you will. Like, how did you develop the concept of using pop culture to engage remote learning students who are working face-to-face in a traditional classroom? Where did that kind of get started before we talk about where you're headed next?
So our first curricular package was with economics education. Mm-hmm. And I think that, and there are a number of economics educators who, going back, you know, almost pre-internet, I should mm-hmm. say, maybe not pre-internet, but the early years of internet, who recognized that a lot of TV shows actively talk about economic concepts. Mm-hmm. Seinfeld is an absolutely brilliant example of that. And so they were beginning to use excerpts in their college classrooms from Seinfeld and other TV shows. Mm-hmm. The person who first introduced this to me was a teaching professor at Penn State University named Dirk Mateer. Mm-hmm. But there are a number of others who were kind of revolutionary in figuring out how to do that. Dirk has a website. He also does mapping of pop culture songs, not just videos, into curriculum. And so on. And so when I was working as an advisor to a small family foundation who was wanting to make a grant to Florida State University, I called up a professor that I had met before and said, hey, do you have anything we can give some money to? And he said, we're having this meeting in a couple weeks to do the final cut of the videos that we want to use for a new Common Sense Economics course package we're putting together. Why don't you and your client come and sit in on it? And so I went to Tallahassee and for 2 days sat in in the offices of the Stavros Center for Economic Education with popcorn and soft drinks, and we watched video clips with a group of teacher, high school teachers, community college teachers, 4-year teachers, the authors of the book, and did a detailed analysis of which video is there. Here are 3 videos that illustrate the law of demand. Which is the best one? How could we shorten it? This one's too long at 7 minutes. We need to get it back down, down to 4. So I kind of watched and apprenticed with that team at the Stavros Center first. And then kind of went on from there.
Nice. Well, it's so funny. I'm like smiling, laughing here as you gave that Seinfeld example, because I mean, it must have been within the past 5 days, Fred, that I just referenced an early episode, because I've been kind of doing a rewatch of George trying to invest in some stock, so like some financial connection there. I'm sure it's part of, one of the reference pieces, but these are the kinds of character stories that really stick with us, right? That help reinforce those concepts. So, it's so funny to think about what examples, we might have. What are the new things that we don't know about that are going to resonate with students? So I just really, really love the whole story behind all of this. And so, before we finish up, and anyone who's listening today, there's links right here in the description. So you can learn more about potentially, you can learn more about everything that we're talking about today. But what is next? What's on the horizon for you all?
Well, another lesson that we learned from teachers and their COVID experience was it was really hard to tell what students were doing. Mm-hmm. And so because we digitally distribute our content on our own platform, we are now building out tools that will allow teachers and parents and students and schools to be able to tell, are students learning what they're supposed to be learning? When are they learning? That sort of thing. Kind of give them there's a lot of assessment on outcomes, but there's very little good data that's available to teachers on the process by which students learn. And so we're building out those kinds of tools. We've had some trouble with our quizzes being distributed on the internet. So we're going to make our quizzes all open source in the sense that we're going to make them self-quizzes rather than have them as secret things to find out afterwards. So we're going to be changing the curriculum up. And then one last thing is that we distribute our books or our materials as both student and teacher editions.
Okay.
So there's there's sort of a linear textbook with all the interlaced video. And then in addition, teachers have a whole range of extra resources from discussion questions and best answers to classroom activities to a series of kind of supplemental lessons that we have added in that are not kind of part of the main focus of that week's content.
Okay.
But where teachers may want to, want to curate their own structure for how they organize the materials. So we have, for instance, we in our economics curriculum, we're building a whole bunch of lessons on pop culture and economics and how it sort of shows up that's more kind of trendy, if you will. The math, we tried to take math out of the textbook, but we're adding it back in as supplemental lessons for students or teachers who may want to get more math. In the history courses, we've added a whole series of lessons, kind of one per week, on things like what was going on with race in the country or in the world, depending on if it's American or world history at this time. What might be some relevant information, given how important a topic race is in our understanding of history. So we have built out a lot of those resources, and we're building out a lot more. One final thing along those lines is, I not only believe in kind of a 360 approach to learning, but also that you need to involve all of your senses. And so as we were building a world history book a few years ago, I kept thinking to myself, whenever I've traveled, what really sticks is the smells of places. And when I go back to a place, what I recognize immediately is the smells. So we have constructed a world history cookbook that looks at recipes from different times and places that are true to the history of the time and place. That we're going to create and we're going to make into an additional classroom resource for teachers that are trying to connect with their students.
Awesome. Well, that's all. I mean, all such exciting things that are happening. I love that cookbook idea. I definitely agree with you from my own travel experiences, right? Or the things that you smell and you taste as you go along, you're always trying to replicate when you get back home after being in a place that you love. But, you know, this idea of using pop culture to support students in a variety of different areas, I think is really powerful, and just excited about your resources that make this easier for teachers. So thank you so much, Fred, for joining in on the podcast today.
It's a pleasure. Thank you for having me.
It was so much fun chatting with Fred for today's episode. As you could probably tell from my enthusiasm during the conversation, there are a lot of things I love, but social studies education, pop culture references, favorite TV shows, and getting a behind-the-scenes look at how something got made are definitely top of my list. So let's finish up this episode like we always do by making this EdTech easy. First, be intentional about the media clips you choose. Next, use a library of vetted content. Then, choose content that is high quality and relevant. And finally, use educational content to spark discussions. Remember, you can find the show notes and the full list of resources from this episode on classtechtips.com/podcast, including all the ways to connect with a team at Certel. A big thank you to Certel, makers of Poptential. Certel's mission is to create informed and engaged citizens by supporting the innovative teachers who are disrupting our traditional civic education system. They do this by providing a sensible, media-rich curriculum that equips teachers to connect with and motivate digitally savvy students. The result is self-governing students who make up their own minds about complex issues. If you are listening to this podcast on Apple Podcasts or Spotify or another favorite app, don't forget to hit the follow button. When you follow along with the podcast, each new episode will download for you automatically, so you don't miss a thing. And if you have a moment and are feeling extra helpful today, please leave a rating or review for the podcast. It helps other educators find this podcast when they're searching for topics like ed tech or even pop culture or online learning in their podcast app. Have a great week and check back on Tuesday morning for the upcoming new episode of the Easy EdTech Podcast.
Don't forget to subscribe to the Easy EdTech Podcast wherever you're listening.